Well, we are studying, looking through, or examining the book of James. Actually, a letter, which you guys know. So if you've been here for any length of time, we've been going through this little letter. It's in the almost towards the very end of your Bible. And it was written by the half-brother of Jesus. And he was writing it to a whole bunch of Christ followers. And so he was writing this letter because he was concerned about them. And what we said was, and the main idea that came out of this entire letter that we've been following week after week after week, is simply this idea that authentic faith produces authentic deeds. Because James' whole point was, you can't say that you follow Jesus and then live completely different. It doesn't work that way. That what you do and what you say you believe need to be together. They need to be linked. Now, there's intimate connection between what we believe and what we do. In fact, what James says, it's impossible actually to pull those two things apart, because what you do will show what you actually believe. And so he's been looking at this, and last week we looked at this whole idea of true wisdom. Remember that? So if you were here last week, we looked at this idea of what wisdom is, and we said that true wisdom was a right knowledge rightly applied. Remember that? We talked about that. And we examined where that true wisdom comes from, what it looks like, what the impact is on our lives. We kind of went through all that. And then, as James frequently does in his letters, he makes a transition. Now remember, he doesn't have any chapters or verses. That was all added much later. So in the original letter, he's just making a transition of thought, but it's connected, right? You know, when you have conversation and you kind of, one conversation triggers the next thought and then you kind of move on, but they're sort of connected. That's what James is doing, okay? So, and he does the same thing he's been doing all the way through the letter. He starts this next train of thought, still connected to wisdom, but he starts it with this question. What causes fights and quarrels among you? What makes you angry? What makes you upset with other people? How many of you said, look, I would have no issue with anger if the world had no issue with idiots? Right? Come on, preach it, Weldon. That's right. I mean, how many of you think that way? You're like, I don't have an issue with anger. I mean, people are just dumb. And if they just didn't do these things, I wouldn't have any problems with anger. So let me ask this maybe a little bit different, okay? Here's the question. What is your relationship with anger? If you were to describe your relationship with anger, what is it? Okay, maybe here's a better question. If I asked your spouse, your children, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your boss, your employees, your students, what would they say your relationship with anger is? Huh. You know, most of you have actually been victims of road rage, right? Anybody a victim of road rage? Most of you have been victims. Most of you are saying, I've never been a victim, because you don't know what it is, right? Road rage is simply, you know, people acting out against anybody who does something they don't want. I know none of you have ever been a perpetrator of road rage. I appreciate that about all of you, right? But here's the thing. When we talk about anger or rage, you know what everybody says? Well, I've never been filled with rage in my entire life. I don't get angry. And do you know why? Because we're clever people. So, we say things like this. Oh, I get frustrated now and again. I don't get angry. That's just me responding to people being stupid. I get frustrated. I mean, come on. You know what? I'm a little annoyed with them right now. You know, it just kind of bugs me. I just get a little bit annoyed. They're so irritating. I'm not angry. I'm irritated. Or, if you're really cultural, I say, chap, I'm a little vexed right now, right? No? Okay. Oh, no, no. If it's really bad, I might get exasperated. See, I don't care what you call it. Call it whatever you want to call it. It's anger, and it affects our relationship. Now, as you sit here this morning, part of the problem is we have one picture of anger. We think of extroverted anger. Extroverted anger is the one who yells. They get angry, and you can know they're angry because, you know, they go off. That's the road rage stuff, right? That's called extroverted anger. I mean, it's there. Voices are raised. You know, doors are slammed, that kind of stuff. In reality, more people do introverted
anger. You know what that is, right? Silence. Moodiness. A perpetual frown to let people know you are not happy. And I got news for you. Introverted anger can be just as scary, just as intimidating, and just as damaging as extroverted anger. It's not really the issue. So what we're going to do in these next 2 weeks, especially two pieces, because it kind of is one big thought, but it was too much for 1 week, is we're going to look at how this impacts relationships, and we're going to look at conflict. Everybody's favorite topic. Because James has just come off of this whole thing about wisdom, and he starts saying, look, guys, you have to understand what happens with conflict. And here's the thing, and I'm going to tell you this, and you might think I'm overstating it, but I don't think I am. The concept we're going to learn today, if you really get it and you internalize it, will utterly change every relationship that you have for the rest of your life. And it will change the amount you are in conflict completely. I mean, it's a life-changing concept that James introduces here. It's utterly amazing. It actually might help you conquer that emotion of anger and change that relationship that you have with it. So, let's go back. What causes fights and quarrels among you? You know, where James begins with this, and if you're following closely, right, if you look at this question that he begins with, what causes fights and quarrels among you? A lot of you are thinking, James, that's the wrong question. What should the question read? Who causes fights and quarrels among you? Because you know what our response is when there's conflict? Well, you don't understand. You know what my mother-in-law did? I mean, if she hadn't done that thing, you know, my boss is such a blank. You know, if you knew my kids, if you really knew my kids, you would understand. Do you know what my husband did? Do you know what my wife did? So, catch this. It's really, really important. As long as you think the problem is a who instead of a what, you will never get to the root of your relational problems and your anger. James picked this word very intentionally because he says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? And then he goes on, he answers his own question. He says, don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You know what causes anger and all the quarrels and all the personal conflict you have and the irritations with your spouses and your kids and your boss and your friends and your relatives? You know what it causes? You know what the cause is? You. And half of you are going, no, 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 it's not me. Remember? They're idiots. I'm nice. I'm just responding. But it's not a who, it's a what. So here's the thing. The source of your anger and conflict, and this is the main idea, you can see it up there in the yellow. The source of your anger and conflict is inside, not outside. Because as long as it's outside, you will never have victory over it. You have to understand that it's inside. So he begins by saying, hey, the root of all your anger and all your conflicts is your desires. Whenever I get angry, or whenever you have a relational conflict, it is always, always, because there's something you want that you're not getting. A frustrated desire. And you think, oh, that's not true. I mean, come on. They promised to do something, they didn't do it. Right? Which means you want them to fulfill their promise. Ah, no, you don't understand, Mom. I mean, I did all the hard work at my job, and, you know, I deserve to get, you know, the reward for that. Right. So you're upset because you're not getting what you deserve. No, you don't understand. I just want my kids to show me respect. Okay, sounds good. So you're not getting the respect that you desire. Well, that's not fair. I mean, this whole thing, the way they're treating me, the way this is going down, it's just not fair. You need to treat fairly. That sounds great. You know, fairness is a good goal. So what's really happening is you are not getting the fair treatment that you want. Do you understand? Every conflict
Every fight you have with your spouse, every issue you have with your kids, everything you have at work is because there is a frustrated desire that is not being fulfilled and it leading to anger and conflict. Now, this is tough because it kind of takes the spotlight off of everybody else and their idiocy and puts it this way, right? Focuses on me. But James, he wants to illustrate this. So he actually goes on. He says, you desire something, but you can't have it, right? Doesn't matter if it's good, if it's bad, if it's indifferent. You want something, you're not getting it. So you kill. And we think, okay, hold on, James. Yeah, you're using hyperbole here to make a point. I get it. Yes. And no. Because do you know what James is saying? He's saying, look, when your desires are not fulfilled and it leads to anger or whatever word you want to use, James is simply saying that if it is left unchecked, it has the potential to tremendously damage your life and the lives of the people around you. Because anger and frustrated desires that are left unchecked can go down a road that leads to places that you can't even imagine. And some of you know this. Because you can't believe a relationship is here when it started over here. And you're like, how did it ever get to here? It's so damaged. You can't get what you want. And so you quarrel and you fight. It's all about what's going on in here. See, if you don't recognize and I don't recognize that the source or the root of everything is in here and not out there, that it's a what, not a who, we'll take things to this unhealthy, destructive stream. So catch this. My conflict with others is not from their inability to see the world the way I want them to see it. But that's usually what happens. You're not getting this. You're not seeing this the way I want to. You don't understand. It should be like this. You're not seeing it the way I want you to see it. And I cannot tell you simply how just letting this truth sink in will change your life. If every time there's a conflict, you said, you know what? The root of this conflict, the root of this anger is here. What do I want that I'm not getting? Because as long as you think it's them, then you have an excuse not to control you. Now, of course, unfairness and broken promises and, you know, things that we should get that we're not, that should upset you. I get that. That makes sense. But wise people, and James has been talking about wise people, understand that that's not the root of the problem, that we have a part in all of this. We always do. I think of it this way. Okay? What conflict does, and this is kind of what James has been talking about. Conflict shakes us up, right? Life's going along, it's all smooth, you know, things are going along, and then we have a conflict, and it gets us irritated. It kind of shakes up our lives, okay? We don't like it. It's uncomfortable. Now, here's the thing. Here's what conflict does. If it shakes us up enough, what's inside comes out. Ooh, Skittles. That's good. I like that. Some of us, it shakes us up, and you know what comes out? Nothing. Death. The solution is not to stop the shaking. It's to change what's inside the container. And what James is pointing out, he's saying, look, you know what's causing fights and quarrels among you? Don't blame the external. Don't blame the shaking. Don't blame the people. Don't blame all that. It's because of what's coming out from inside. Because you will never go through your life and not be shaken up in conflict. It can't happen. The source of your anger and conflict and my anger and my conflict is inside and not outside. And what is inside is coming for you. And it's coming for the people around you. That's why James has been focusing on what's in here in this whole thing. Now, here's the problem. This is the issue that James is addressing in the middle of this. Right? Because as long as we think it's them and the excuse is it's them, it's their problem, it's a who, it's not a what, then I don't have to control me. But here's what James has been getting at in this entire thing, this entire piece. It's we've made other people the focus of our desires instead of God. Because he goes on. He says this. Look, You don't have, right? You have frustrated desires. Your desires that you think you want, you're not getting. You're blaming other people because you think it's them, it's not you. He says, the reason you don't have is because you aren't asking God for them. Interesting. But then you can just hear the response. People are like, no, I am asking God. I mean, I ask God that I should get what I want. I ask God that I should get that. I ask God that they would see things the right way. I ask God that he would be fair, that they would be fair. I'm asking God. So James goes on. He says, when you do ask, you don't receive. Because you ask with the wrong motives that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. And then he goes on with this very strong statement, you adulterous people. Don't you know that friendship with the world means enmity against God? If you choose to become a friend of the world, you're an enemy of God. See, there are two parts to this problem. This whole idea of making others the focus, okay? And here's the first. We've put the solution to our conflict problems in other people. Okay, so when I have conflict and I have desires that aren't being met, the way that gets fixed is if they change, okay? And even when we own our peace, like, oh, I need to change. Yeah, but they need to change. Yeah, oh, I need to, oh, I know, but they need to change. Because here's what happens. We think, if only they treated me right. If only they were fair. If only they did what they promised. If only they led me better. If only they followed me better. If only they acted with respect and consideration, then everything would be solved. And what happens is we demand this from others, and when those desires have not been fulfilled, we get angry. And there's conflict. So James says, hey, your logical first step, because this is your first problem. Your first problem is you're looking for it from other people. So it says, here's your first step. That's our first problem. So your logical step is go to God instead of people, right? You have this desire, take it to God first. But then this is where we run into the second problem. Because when we finally go to God with some of this stuff, here's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get him to fix the situation so I can get what I want. And it sounds so noble. Sounds so good. Hey, God, you know, would you fix this? I mean, they're really being unfair in this. Would you open their eyes so they can see how unfair they are and we can be reconciled? Do you realize how manipulative a prayer that is? God, you know what? If you would just bring my kids to their senses so they can see all the stupid things they're doing, because if they could finally see what they're doing, we could have peace in our house. And James is saying, look, you're not, you're actually praying because it's all based on what you want and what you desire. I read this week. It was a really good quote. It says, prayer is not best described as accessing God, but as being accessed by God. It's not about power, but about submission. It's not about requesting, but submitting. You cannot manipulate God into getting what you want. By the way, this is one of the strongest verses against the health and wealth gospel, you know, the prosperity gospel that says, oh, if you just believe God, ask him for good things, have a lot of faith, he's going to bless you with lots of money. That is manipulative. God cannot and will never be manipulated. And it's true in your relationships. And sometimes as Christians, we're like, well, I can't deal with things seen directly, so I'm just going to ask God to do it for me. Once again, the issue, by the way, is not that we desire rightness. It's not that we desire credit. It's not that we desire fairness. Those desires in and of themselves are not wrong thing. It's the selfish orientation that we bring to the table with God. We set our affections on the wrong thing. And there's this really interesting thing here. He says, you adulterous people. It's very, very strong language, right? He's saying, look, you people, you are cheaters on your first love. Now think about it. The church was called the bride of Christ. He's saying, look, you people as a church are so preoccupied with yourselves and other things that you have been unfaithful to Jesus, who is your first love. You've chosen that the value system and the things you see in the world, the things that you want, the things that are important to you, have now taken precedence. Its value system, its loyalties, all that stuff there has taken precedence over the kingdom. Why you have conflict? Because this is what's most important to you. Now, what's interesting to me in all that is
this is all a choice. You are not victims. None of us has to act a certain way. We actually get to choose. Because look what he says. Anyone who chooses to become a friend of the world. Because this doesn't just happen. It's choices that we make over and over and over and over again. And when we get angry and when we have conflict and we make the same choices over and again, we build this pattern into our life. He says, look, you are submitting to the value system of the world, and that's why nothing's getting better, because you are over here and you should be over here. You've made a choice. We get to choose, which is really positive, by the way, because that means we get to choose the right way. And now verse 5, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it. It's kind of got really difficult phraseology, and I looked at a whole bunch of different ways this can be interpreted. But no matter which way you look at it, the essential of it is simply, when James is writing, he says, look, it connects all the way back to this idea in Exodus 20 that God is a jealous God. But the idea is, hey, God wants you, and he wants your heart, and he does not want to share it with anyone or anything else. So when you're turning your minds and your affections over here, he says, no. I want you back over here. Not just because I'm God and I deserve it, but because I know this is how you deal with all your conflict. This is how you're going to get past things. This is how you're going to find peace in your relationships. But then he makes this really interesting statement. So you think, okay, this is all difficult as it is. But then he starts out, he actually makes this statement. But he gives us more grace. God is always willing to deal with us if we come to him. Because he gives us grace, he'll give us increasing amounts of grace, and we need his grace. I do. He will actually strengthen us to deal with our unmet desires and see the situation differently. He will actually work in us so that anger is not our master, and that our conflicts will be different. The temperature is going to go down in the room. Things are going to be different. He will do all of those things. But do you know what has to happen for him to do that? And this is where it gets fun. We need humility. Humility is required. If we want to look honestly, so follow the train of thought here, okay? I'm having a fight and a quarrel, and James is saying, stop looking out there. It's not their fault. It's not what they did to you. It's not all that. That's not what's causing all the problems. The problem is you've got these desires inside you that are not being met, okay? And that's starting to cause it because you are expecting all of them to be fulfilled by your spouse, your partner, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your boss, your kids. You're expecting them to be filled all here. And when they don't, it's causing problems. You should instead be going to God for all your desires. Because when you go to God for your desires and you do it honestly, he's going to go right in. He's going to say, absolutely, I'm going to give you grace. I'm going to change how you look at things. I'm going to change how you do things. But if you want that to happen, you have to be humble. And so James, he actually quotes a proverb that says, a God opposes the proud but shows favor to the humble. Do you know, actually, arrogance makes no sense. It's illogical. People who are arrogant and proud, they're actually illogical, because there's nothing logical about thinking to yourself, I know what's best, nobody else does, they need to change things because I'm the one who sees the world right, they're wrong. I mean, it just doesn't even make sense. It's not borne out in every area of our life. Humility makes sense because humility says, okay, this is what I'm seeing, but I know I don't have the full picture. When we reject the input of other people or figure that they need to change, but I'm fine, it doesn't make sense. And that's why this section is connected with the one he just wrote. Because here's the thing, you cannot be a wise person and an arrogant person at the same time. Not possible. Every wise person you've ever met has humility. And what should give us pause in this is not simply that arrogance is illogical and that it's counterproductive, but God is opposed to the proud. I mean, this is kind of really crazy, because what James is saying, look, if you're humble and you come and you bring these desires to God and say, yes, God, it's not fair. These things aren't going the way I want. They're not treating me the way they should. It's not happening the way I want. This relationship is not right. These are the things I want. They seem like they're good things. God, would you do something? God says, absolutely. Now let's start with you. What's going on inside of you? What are the things that you're feeling, that you're doing, that you're acting, that are driving you? And he says, I'll work with you. I'll give you grace. But if we come to God and say, look, they're wrong. Would you fix them? Because I'm right and they're not. Do you know that God is opposed to you? He will actually work against you to bring you to a place of humility. Why is this so important? Because when we don't get what we're promised, when things aren't fair, when they're taking advantage of, when we're not showing respect, it is really hard to look here first. Honestly, this is one of my biggest struggles in life. And I can still think back. I mean, I don't know that you ever get there on this side of heaven. But I can think back to early in my life when I had some of my first leadership positions. And I can remember one particular time when someone just was steamed at me. They were angry. They thought I had done something wrong and poorly. And I thought, you did not. You did everything right. You're just a sour old prune. At the time, this lady was probably 40, okay, so, but I was young, okay, and I thought, you're just, I didn't do anything wrong, and I thought, okay, I have to do something. I remember showing her and saying, hey, look, I understand you're upset. Well, if I did anything, I'm really sorry about it. Real genuine, huh? Didn't go over well. And it's because I had desires, deep desires inside that said, I want to be accepted. I don't want to fail. I want to be significant. And if I admit that I messed this up, that's going to get stirred up and shaken. So you know what? I'm right. They're wrong. That is the epitome of an arrogant response. And God is gracious. He does things over time, especially for those of us that are slow learners. He says, I'm going to work in you. But when I say, okay, God, here's what I really want, and I'm not getting it, it's causing problems, he says, I know. So let's work on that. And all of a sudden you find that the temperature in conflicts goes from here to here. And some things that seem so big now become so small. And some things that you thought were everybody else's problem, you go, oh, that really has nothing to do with them. That's all me. If we have had kind of humility, God treats those people with favor. Gives them gifts of his grace. So, come all the way back to our first question. What is your relationship with anger? And would you like to see that relationship changed? I would actually ask it this way too, if it's hard to kind of grab a handle on it. Is your anger more prevalent in regards to certain relationships? You know, there's certain people that just set you off. Is that where your anger sits? Or maybe it's just certain types of people. Lazy people. People who work too hard. Messy people. Inconsiderate people. I don't know. What kind of groups of people? Maybe it's just in certain environments. Everybody at work thinks you are amazing and gentle and friendly and wonderful. And if they interviewed your kids would say, what? So maybe it's the environment you're in. I don't know. What's your relationship with anger? Do you want to put an end to that? Do you want it to stop from controlling your mouth and your mood? Do you want to see your relationships be increasingly life-giving instead of the other way around? And when conflict shakes you up, wouldn't you like to see Skittles come out? The source of your anger and conflict is inside and not outside. And when you own your desires in humility with God, changes the temperature in any situation. Everything looks different. And if you look to Jesus to meet your needs instead of others, it will change everything, but that's going to take humility. Because here's the thing. You know, Jesus was in charge, and he didn't get everything he wanted either. He was God and didn't get everything he wanted. And he said no to himself so he could give you what you needed. Look at this. Paul was writing this. He's talking about Jesus. And he said, who being in very nature God, he's saying Jesus was God.
Understand this. Jesus had everything. He was the creator of the world. He was enthroned in heaven. He had every power that could ever exist, because every single person that's ever lived owes their existence and their life and everything they have to him. He deserves all the credit. He deserves all the praise. He deserves all your allegiance. He deserves you to submit to him completely. He should get everything. If you want it to be fair, he had every conflict you ever had. He always had the winning argument. There was never okay, God, you take your piece of the pie and I'll take my piece of the pie, because it was always completely my piece of the pie. He had all of that. And yet he did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage, and rather he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant and being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself. See, even Jesus did not get what he wanted. He did not power up. We do that. I didn't get what I want. I'm powering up. I'm going at this harder. I am going to show them that they're wrong, that I am right. I'm going to make lists. I'm going to record conversations. I'm going to go at them. They're going to see they're wrong, I'm right. He never powered up. Even though he could have, should have, he never pressed in to crush the people around him. Instead, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Rather than claim what he was owed, he allowed himself to die. Because the relationship with you and with me was more important than winning an argument. And Paul, who wrote these words, started it by saying, have the same mindset as Jesus. It is better to not get what you've earned, what you deserve, or were promised, than to let anger wreck relationships. The source of your anger and your conflict is inside and not outside. So the next time you feel yourself getting enraged or frustrated or irritated or angry, stop. Be wise. Be humble. Look inside and say, okay, God, what is going on? What is it that I want so badly that I'm not getting? And then take those and bring them and lay them at the feet of Jesus and say, all right, Jesus, you got to do something with it. Change me. And then you can live and rest in the grace and the favor of Jesus. This is only part one. Part two, next week, we're going to continue on this topic and look at one other thing that's really, really key in keeping conflict in relationships off of our radar.